You're listening to Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast on digital stream radio.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome everyone to this special episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast. On this episode, we're going to welcome playwright Ricardo Perez Gonzalez and, of course, director David Mendizabal of the play On the Grounds of Belonging, which will have its worldwide premiere at Long Wharf Theater here in the great city of New Haven. We're super excited about that. With me in studio, of course, is my co-host,
hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And you already know that voice, of course.
Here
and the
I
reason
am.
Why we're here, sans Chris, is because you work for Longworth Theater.
And it's also a Wednesday, so.
And it's a Wednesday, yeah. And Chris is in school and working and doing all that good stuff, so which is why he's not here with us. But it really gives us an opportunity to dig a little bit about, or dig a little into, what it is that goes on in your place of employment,
yeah,
outside of the studio, and to talk about productions such as the ones we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, no, of course.
I'm super excited. So just to give you a little bit of background on the actual play itself, again, it's called On the Grounds of Belonging, and it is a breathtaking new story of forbidden love in the 1950s Jim Crow Texas. It's timeless in its telling. This stirring universal story of star-crossed lovers will sweep you away. In Houston, at the height of Jim Crow, segregation pervades society in every way, including an underground and illegal gay bar scene. One night, a chance encounter between Russell at a local at...
You got this.
I got this.
At okay, a local?
Right. At a local at the Blacks Only Gold Room. And
a
Tom.
Local at the Blacks Only Gold Room. And Tom from the Whites Only Red Room.
It's not me.
So there are two bars, uh-huh, separated, and they're owned by the same owner. Mm-hmm. Leads to a forbidden love story between two men that destroy them both. The spellbinding On the Grounds of Belonging signals the arrival of a bold new voice in the American theater. And what is so amazing about that is it's coming from New Haven, and it's coming from Long Wharf Theater.
That's right.
There has been a lot of change at our theater recently. We recently brought in a new artistic director, Jacob Padrone, and his huge push really is to connect the stories that are on our stage to the people that live in our community.
That's right.
So that we're representing the faces and the people in our community so people can connect to the stories. But what's super exciting about this play, and for me, and I'm sure for you, is that it's really the first LGBTQ+ themed play that we are producing, fully producing. And it's a world premiere, and it's super exciting. It's a sadly Romeo and Juliet love story, but it's a trilogy, so we never know what's going to happen.
So, which is amazing. That's the beauty of theater, right? It's like you can go and produce, do one production, and then come back and do certain other variations or different parts of the play.
Yeah, and just continue the story.
Of course. And so it just leaves an opportunity for building.
I'm not saying there's a cliffhanger, but there might be.
You never know. So yeah. So I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
So obviously you work for Long Wharf Theater.
I do.
You know, you've been there for quite a while.
I know.
And you have had many different roles. Can you tell us what your first, when you started at Long Wharf Theater,
yeah,
what did you do?
So I was the company manager for Long Wharf Theater, which meant I took care of all of the guest artists. So our actors, designers, playwrights, everybody that came in from out of town, from their contracts to their housing, travel, general well-being, everything. I kind of like was their liaison to New Haven. And I loved that role. And I was in that role for about 5 years. And recently I moved into a role that supports the theater in a different way. I'm in corporate giving. So basically I go out and I ask people for money to help support the work that we do.
And you're so good at it, by the way. Yeah, you are. I think you are.
I have a high goal. So we'll see what happens. But the point of supporting the arts is the fact that a couple of years ago, I'm not even a couple, 15, 20 years ago, New Haven itself was not a healthy city. It wasn't until the city actually took time to start not a fundraiser, but an initiative to actually go out and say, we need to fund the arts. We need to support the arts. The arts are what people want. So when we have the arts in a city, people come in, they want to be here. And then when that happens and you have all of these people coming to see these plays, restaurants flourish, businesses grow,
communities grow as a result.
Exactly. So
that's a domino effect.
Right. So that happened about 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now New Haven is this like mecca of art and life and community. And it's beautiful. And as we move forward, it's like this ebb and flow effect, right? People are like, all right, well, we did that. We're doing good. So let's pull back. So that can't happen. We have to continue to support the arts. And as we move forward, especially now that we have, you know, Jacob at the helm and Kit, our new managing director, who is amazing. We really need to find a way to help support the art and the work that we want to do. Because not only are we doing work that is affecting the 50,000 people that come to our theater every year, but it's affecting over 6,000 growing students that we either work with at schools or bring to the theater. Because a lot of kids, tell me if I'm wrong, I'm not. A lot of kids don't learn by the books. You know, they're more interactive. And the way
in today's age, yes.
Yeah. And the way theater teaches how to learn, it's by doing and by interacting and being active. And there's so much benefit to having the arts in a community. But if you look at it historically, the arts are the first thing that get cut in schools.
Yeah.
So that being said, yeah, we have an amazing season and a new artistic director that's bringing life and love to the community. And it's super exciting to see.
So I'm seeing a lot of changes in our communities, which is very reflective of the actual community that lives within the outskirts of New Haven and even in the greater New Haven area. So, for example, Jacob is Latinx, right? He's part of the Latin community. Mm-hmm. He's bringing a different type of managing style to the theater,
yeah,
that is exposing people to different types of art, like the one that we're going to cover today.
Yeah. What's important to know about that is one of Jacob's, I'm not going to say biggest accomplishments, but most astounding to me personally is the Soul Project. Now, this was a project where he identified that Latinx playwrights weren't being produced. Mm-hmm. They weren't being fostered and allowed to really build on the work. And so Ricardo, who wrote this play, I believe he's a part of the Soul Project, but basically what he did was he partnered playwrights, Latinx playwrights, with regional theaters like Long Wharf Theater so that theater then could foster the work and help them workshop it and build the play. And then that theater would then fully produce the play. So he developed the Soul Project with Lin-Manuel Miranda backing him.
Which is amazing.
It's amazing. And what he's doing is something that we've never seen in regional theater before, and he's developed a cohort of artistic directors of color around the nation that are really changing the face of what regional theater will be. And it's super exciting to see, but we also need, at this point in life, for theater itself, as people don't come to the theater enough, especially millennials, we need to find more funding and more ways to support underwriting tickets so that this story that we're going to talk about today is historic. It's impactful. It has so many layers to it. Mm-hmm. But these stories need to be shared so that we can see representation of all aspects of life on our stage and on stages around the country. And I think that is what's so important about what Jacob is doing.
So we're going to take a musical break so that when we come back, we do have both the playwright and the producer of the play on the line with
director.
Us. The director. They're going to be on the line with us talking about the play. But I wanted to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Given that this play has an LGBTQ undertone, the relationship is between two men.
Yeah.
How impactful and how important is a story like that in a city like New Haven, launching in a city like New Haven?
I think it's beyond impactful. I think that, as you know, the LGBTQ+ community has been underrepresented underrepresented for years, mm-hmm. not to mention the part of the community of color has even been more segregated. And that it actually speaks to that in the play as well. And this play speaks to not only the community as a whole, but how segregation actually took a toll on a portion and still actually takes a toll on a portion of our community. There are a lot of elements in this play. It's a beautiful play, and I'm super excited to talk about it. But I'm just super excited to see a story that I can relate to on our stage.
That's amazing. All right, well, listen, we're going to take a quick musical break. And when we come back, we have more on this topic.
If you need my hands to pull you up above the earth, well, I will lift you up to show you just how much you're worth, 'cause we need to be loved. So we
love that we have for ourselves enough.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. From the break, that was We Need to Be Loved by the incredible Anthony Starbell, a previous guest of ours, as you all very well know. And we are back, and now joining us, of course, is the playwright Ricardo Perez Gonzalez and a director, David Mendizabal. I hope I said that correct. And they are the creators and producers of On the Loves...
On the Grounds of Belonging. I got him. I got him.
Belonging. Thank you. we started the show, we were having a conversation about the work that's done in the theater and how important, productions like this is for the Latinx community and for playwrights like yourself and producers and people in the theater community, to see some of these productions, and where they can relate to the material that they're watching and experiencing on stage. Yeah. So I want to take an opportunity to welcome you both. And then of course, Nick and I are just going to bounce off and question you guys on what the experience is like.
We're going to put you through the ringer.
Yeah, we are.
So first, you know me, I'm Nick. Hi guys.
And I'm Tom.
Oh. I don't hear any audio, Tom.
I don't hear any audio from them, but they should be having audio on their side.
Hello?
We're here.
Hey. All right, we're good now. We're Ricardo, here. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling lots better. Thank you for asking.
Okay, good. I was a little worried.
And you guys can hear us okay?
Yep, we hear you.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for joining us. And I'm going to let Nick go ahead and kick it off for us.
So this is super exciting for me. So I've had this podcast with Tom and Chris, who can't be here today, for going on 3 years now. That's and right. I've never, ever had anybody from Long Wharf join us. So this is kind of a big deal for me. So I'm super nervous. Anyway, so I want to just dive in with you guys. There are so many layers to this story. Not only the fact that it's one of the first times we've put an LGBTQ plus theme play on our stage, but the fact that there are racial elements and it takes place in the 1950s, and there's segregation and just love between two people. It's such an intense story. And I wanted to talk a little bit about where this came from and why right now it's so important to tell this story.
I guess that's me. The play On the Grounds of Belonging came from a story I heard once. It started like most good stories do with a boy. I was dating this gentleman whose his gay elders, some older gay friends of him, his actually went to these racially segregated gay bars in Houston, Texas. So I was dating this gentleman. He mentioned this to me. And my first thought was, there were racially segregated gay bars in Houston, Texas. That makes sense. Why queer people are not immune to the same oppressions and the same prejudices that larger society is. So... of course, that makes sense. And then my second thought was, there were racially segregated gay bars in Houston, Texas in the 1950s. Oh, well, interesting. There still are.
Right.
You know, I was living in New York at that time, and I was thinking about how pretty much all of the gay bars and straight bars as well, I think this is true, are essentially cater to white crowds or cater to black crowds or Latina crowds, and how self-segregated the queer scene still is. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see whites only signs, you only need to go on Grindr, for goodness sakes. So for me, it stemmed from a very real story, very real people. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's still going on today.
Right. So you're a Latin writer. And being a Latin writer, how does this then translate to your life? Why was this so important for you to talk about? Because in the story itself, we're not talking about the Latin community. We're talking about a Caucasian community, and we're talking about an African-American community. And the two bars are actually owned by the same person. So yeah. How does this reflect in your life, and why was this story for you so important to get out there?
Well, you know, for me, the connection to it is queerness and queer history. Mm-hmm. And the kind of deep connection to the fact that queer folk have kind of been erased from history since the get-go. And the stories that we're tell on stage, in movies, and certainly in history, queerness is erased. So my first in was that this was a queer love story. Mm-hmm. And that was my connection there. I was also, you know, I'm a queer man of color, and we don't hear the stories of queer people of color, period, throughout history. And so that was another deep connection. And then there's this interesting thing, because this is the first in the trilogy, and other characters do come into the lover's story, and a young Puerto Rican man comes into it in the third of the trilogy. But there's this interesting thing being Latina in the U.S. There was a young Latino writer who wrote a play, you know, Where Would We Sit on the Back of the Bus? Or Where Would We Sit on the Bus, right? Who was the, do you remember this?
Brian Quijada?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that Latina folk have a particular perspective on segregation and on this history that at times feels like it excludes us, but 100% implicates us. Mm-hmm. And as my, you know, self has to wonder, I wonder where I would fit in that spectrum.
Right.
So all of these things came to bear. And also, frankly, I do think that there's something about this story that drew me and to it, and writing outside of myself on that lens, on that axis, in terms of race, felt kind of plausible.
Right.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that in the Latinx community or in the Latino community, you only need to look so far under the surface to see the segregation even within the Latino community. I mean, for example, in our island of Puerto Rico, for example, you know, you have certain areas on the island, like Loíza, for example, which is predominantly Black. And you start to see some of the segregation because they sort of kind of just find places in where they live, and you see the adversity and the lack of diversity between Puerto Ricans of lighter color versus those Puerto Ricans that are living that are really dark. In the same thing in Mexico, we have areas of Mexico where the Afro-Latino community is very, very affluent and very big and huge, yet, you know, they live in these smaller segregated areas because of the fact that segregation exists even within the Latin community. So telling a story like this, I mean, for us, it should be sort of kind of like, you know, I've seen this before.
Yeah. Right.
To a sense.
I think there is something to that, that it is also, this play in particular, I think, reaches people who think of themselves as liberal, nice-minded people, and implicates them a little bit. And I think that can be true, like you said, in the Latina community, colorism is very real. Mm-hmm. And we are implicated in that, even if it's not explicit in the play. You know what I mean? Even if there's not a Latina character in it. David, you were going to say something. Yeah. I cut you off. Yeah.
Well, I want to take it back a little bit, because I would love for you to kind of give us a brief overview of the play and get people excited about what they're going to see. Either one.
Yeah. The play tells the story of two men, Russell and Tom. Russell, who is a frequent guest of the Gold Room, where the play takes place, which is a Blacks-only queer bar in 1950s in Houston, Texas, run by Hugh. And we have a lounge singer, Tanya, and Russell's on-and-off-again lover, Henry, And basically one night, there, through a turn of events, a raid that's happening across the street at the Red Room, which is the whites only, gay bar, a young white man, dressed in drag, appears, at the Gold Room and sort of sets off a chain reaction of, really, I think in many ways, opening up Russell's world to realize, you know, I think in a lot of ways that the character is feeling, kind of stuck, and kind of, like he has, only a few options and sort of, Tom and him find each other in a moment where they're both looking for something else and fit together. And I think what we sort of see is, you know, this idea of what would happen, if love was enough, if we actually allowed love to exist in its entirety, you know, and if for all of the many reasons outside of you know, the racial oppression that's there, the sort of oppression because they're queer bodies, their youth and the way that, you know, I think people write off the love of young folk, you know, and we sort of see this outside world, this opposing outside world that affects them from so many ways. And I think what we're left to really wonder and question as audience members is like, what would happen in a world where love was actually enough, where two people, regardless of their individual truths, who found each other, could actually just thrive in this sort of bubble of love that they create for themselves, you know? And so I think in a lot of ways, it's a story of coming to terms with one's own identity and one's own identity in the world. I think, you know, as Ricardo said, that there's very much this, you know, where do you stand on the side of history? You know, and I think for a lot of people, we believe that words are enough. And it's really this idea of like words are empty without actions, you know, and how can we, what can we do? What can we do to actively make this love possible? Like what is possible? And so I think in that way, you know, as an audience, regardless of your experience or your identity, racially, your sexuality, your gender, I think this play really makes space for everyone to find themselves in this love story. It's a love story like you've seen before. You know, I think there's something about that, you know, it really, it doesn't shy away from what it is, but it does it in a new and truthful way that I think just really makes space for more people to see themselves in a story that we've seen and we've heard, but we've been left out of.
Right.
So I think, you know, what's exciting is it makes room for all of us to kind of find ourselves in there and find the ways in which, you know, we've been both a part of the love and a part of potentially the hate that's kept the love from blooming.
So David, as you're the director, you have a job to interpret the words that Ricardo has given you. Mm-hmm. How have you worked together to interpret the words and put both his vision and your vision on stage?
Yeah. Well, we have a long history of working together. So I think first and foremost, you know, both Long Wharf and Jacob Padron, the artistic director here, recognized the importance of honoring an artistic collaboration. And so, you know, there's been, you know, we're like an old married couple, you know, and we have that artistic shorthand, you know, and so I think in a lot of ways, there's a lot of trust there. You know, I trust that Ricardo is going to write something beautiful as he always does. And I think he trusts me in the work that I'm going to do. And I think simultaneously, like we instill an incredible amount of trust in our cast, you know, and we know that they're going to bring some deep truths to the characters that are new, and our design team is going to bring some deep truths to the characters that are new. And collectively, I think, you know, we're all coming together to tell this story. Yeah, you know, I think, you know, the shorthand makes it easier. We kind of know that we're going in the right direction. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of places, I think, especially at, you know, we've been developing the play over many years, you know, and the world has changed. And I think even just coming into this process, you know, we really sort of looked at the play with a complete new lens. You know, we said we can't approach this play like we did 2 years ago. The world is a different place, you know, and the idea of love and the idea of interracial relationships and representation, you know, continues to shift and complicate as the world shifts and complicates. And so, you know, I think there was a lot of like really like looking at this play with brand new eyes and saying, okay, we learned so much the last time we did it, but what can we learn here? What space can we make for rigorous conversations and dissonance? And how can we sort of lean into that dissonance to find new truths in the play? Mm-hmm. And then also at the end of the day, I think, you know, I said this from day one, you know, this is a story about love and it can only be made with love. And so I think, you know, really, creating a space for everyone to be able to come into the room, to love what they do, to love the characters, to love the story that they're telling, to find great complication, you know, and I think I feel very strongly that in this play, there is no good guy or bad guy, that inside or good person or bad person, but inside of each and every one of these characters is a deep, messy human complications. Yeah. And when we can sort of unmine that, I think that's where we can find a lot of really great truth and put a piece of theater that really asks questions of our audience instead of feeling like, great, this is a play that's going to tell you what to think. No, this is a play that's going to make you think, we hope, and make you feel and make you want to ask more questions and think about the ways in which you've interacted with the world.
Let me ask you. So we know that love is the epitome of most stories, right? It's what people interject to be able to bind stories together, regardless of what backstory there is included, whether it's racially motivated, whether you know, it's, you know, love here or love there. What I'm interested in is, how are you guys feeling right now at the fact that you're bringing a love story of two queer men from different worlds? It has racial undertones. It touches on the uncomfortable topics of being, you know, in a world in where one person doesn't even have rights, right? You're segregated into your own world, but you're bringing this kind of story as two Latinos,
yeah,
in theater in 2019 for the first time, seeing a worldwide premiere, to tell this kind of story from two Latino men, which is very rare to see in theater. How does that feel?
And before you start, let me just go on to say that I think that Jacob Padron, our new artistic director, has started not only just here in New Haven, but a national movement. And I feel like you guys are kind of at the forefront of that movement of bringing artists of color to the stage that for a long time weren't given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the Soul Project, for example, and we can even dive into what it means to be Hispanic in the industry on top of what Tom's talking about. Yeah. I think these are all important things to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super excited for the opportunity. I feel deep gratitude to Jacob and to Long Wharf and and to Ricardo for advocating for me to be a part of this. I know, you know, the truth of the matter is there are not a lot of Latinx plays that are directed by Latinx directors, period. That is just fact.
And that is a beautiful, important thing to acknowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, just to be here with brown artists, to be telling this story, and queer artists, and to be telling a story that taps into so many of our truths and the truths of the communities in which I think both Ricardo and I artistically, personally, have been raised in and have been advocating for and with. It just feels really exciting to be in this moment, and it feels like definitely uh, it's like a call to action. Do you know what I mean? And I think when given this opportunity in this platform, that it feels like a great responsibility to make space for other stories as well, and to advocate for those stories. And so, you know, I'm super excited to be here at the beginning of what I know to be a really great, exciting wave shift for not only this theater and this community, but the American theater at large. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think there's still, I think with that being said, I will also say that there is still a lot of work to be done.
Oh, yeah,
do you know what I mean? But yeah, it's super exciting. And I think also, you know, just to sort of tap into some of that question of what it means to be also a Latinx artist telling this particular story, I think, you know, this issue, there are deep issues of colorism in our community, and also like a lot of it's a machismo patriarchal community. And so I think as in many communities of color, there are still so many stigmas around sexuality and identity, as it relates to so many number of things that are so near and dear to what makes our culture both so beautiful. And so I think, you know, being able to be here standing authentically in our truth, both as a Latino artist and as a queer artist, and that neither one of those completely define us, but are such a huge part of who we are, why we are, how we are, and how to be able to just stand in that truth on such a incredible platform, an incredible stage, and share a part of that truth just feels like a moment that I don't know that I knew was possible. And I think it was part of the reason why my parents were like, are you crazy? What are you doing going into this field that doesn't see you?
Yeah.
And to be able to show them that we can make space for our stories to be seen.
And that's beautiful, because guess what? 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there's going to be that young kid that's going to school right now that is going to look up and say, that might even be a part of a program that, you know, in collaboration with theaters, gets exposed to this this amazing world of theater and plays and writing and actors, that's going to look up and say, I see myself. You know, you weren't able to see yourself because there was no one there. And the work that you guys are doing is going to allow for someone to come up and say, I see myself. I can do that. And that's going to open the doors and the floodgates for more people in an array of shades to come in and tell.
And say, I have something to stand up for.
And something to say. And I have something to write. And I have something that I want you to see. And I know that I'm going to be able to move you, because when love is involved, it moves everyone. And seeing that love from different lenses, from different creators, from different worlds, is just going to allow for people to really just flourish and see so many talented people come up and step up to the plate and say, I can do this because you guys are doing it. That's beautiful.
Ricardo, did you want to add anything to that last little bit?
No, I think he said it all. I think ultimately it's just so thrilling. It's a thrilling moment. It's a thrilling joy. As David said, being at a theater with a Latina artistic director, with a Latina director, working on a play about the center's people of color, the center's Black folk. And it's really meaningful. It's very thrilling, and I'm very grateful to David, to Jacob, to the cast, who are just amazing and so open-hearted and so phenomenally talented, and everybody's along for the ride, and that's great, because there's this, we're talking about Latinidad, right? And there's this interesting question, is this a Latina play? You know, a Puerto Rican wrote it. Is it a Puerto Rican play?
Right.
It doesn't have a single Puerto Rican in it. And I'll leave that question for critics and scholars and other people. But there's an immense amount of gratitude that there are all of these people working on it, and we're doing it in this context, because Latina theater is, as David, you know, we've been somewhat not on the forefront in terms of theater. So it's just a joy to be here.
Well, that's not going to fucking happen anymore. Let's just say that out loud, and we can say fuck on the show because we can. Anyway, so I have two more things I want to share with you, and then one more thing to ask you before I know you guys have to be somewhere. First, I want to share with you my first experience seeing an LGBT themed show on any stage. So I used to work at Actors Theater of Louisville, and I saw
say that again.
Actors Theater of Louisville. And I saw Edith Can Shoot and Hit Them. And that, amazing. And that play, when you're working the Humana Festival, you don't have much time off, but every time I had a time to see that play, I saw it. I must have seen it like four or five times. And every time I cried because it was the first time I ever saw myself represented on a stage. And it also hit me because it was like, holy crap, they're going through the same thing I went through. I'm connecting to this play. And personally, I want to thank you and thank Jacob and our artistic team for bringing this to our theater, because I know that in our community in New Haven, there are so many people, Latinx, African-American, Caucasian, it doesn't matter, that are going to connect to this play and say, holy shit, that's me. And it means so much to have that on our stage. So thank you so much for writing this. And thank you for being here and directing this beautiful piece of work for us.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
It's our pleasure. And
I'm getting teary-eyed.
Yeah, don't cry.
I always cry.
Don't cry for me. It's okay.
And then last but not least, there's a tagline for the show. And it says, before love is love, love was dangerous. And that speaks to me in a lot of different ways, but I also still feel as though love within our community, within the Latinx community, within an African-American community, within a biracial relationship is still dangerous. And I was wondering if you had a second to speak to that and what it means within this play.
Well, that's precisely the reason I wrote it, and precisely why I'm so glad that it's being premiered now, is that we live in a world that is still persecuting Black and brown bodies, that is still targeting queer bodies, mm-hmm. that is still incredibly hostile to anybody outside of kind of the white heteropatriarchy, mm-hmm. if you will. And I'm a hopeless romantic. Let me be honest. I'm like this wide-eyed puppy dog idealist. I want to believe in love. I want to let love lead. And I think in some other world, a world that we are not in yet, that would be possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we all strive for that ideal, that we keep imagining a better world in which love actually might be enough, in which we don't have to act out hatred. We don't have to do violence onto bodies that are different from our own, that we can actually embrace one another and carry one another into the future. I don't know how far away we are from this idealistic world I'm talking about, but I think every time we imagine it, every time we write it, every time we enter a space and invoke it, we get one step closer.
Yep,
I agree. And,
I had a
guest. I help another friend of mine on a podcast. She has a parenting and lifestyle podcast. It's called the Breezy Moms Podcast. She had a guest on, and the guest said something to the effect of, if you want to see change in the world, you have to will it. You have to say it out loud. You have to will it into existence, say it into existence, and only then write it, say it, speak it, preach it, and only then will you see the change that you're looking to see in the world. Because, you know, if we keep it inside, no one knows that we want that.
Yep.
You're not going to see it. So say it. Yep. Literally say it into existence.
So last but not least, before I let you guys go to your wonderful dinner at Zinc.
I want to go.
Hopes and dreams. Tell me about it. What do you want people to walk away from the theater thinking? How do you want this to affect change? And what do you see for the future of this production, this trilogy?
Yeah. Well, I think hopes and dreams. Oh my God, so many.
Right.
I think, yeah, I think for me, you know, as the director, like my hope is that people will fall in love with these characters. You know, I really want people, and I know that they will, just fall in love with their love. And I think leave really thinking about the ways in which, what can you do to make that love possible? I think it goes back to, I think in another, you know, panel I had talked, they were like, what is your your thesis, and I was like, "Love is not enough," and it sounded so like dreary. But I meant it in the, you know, in the sense of like, it's not enough to just say it. It's like, how do you show it? How do you live it? How do you do it every single day of your life? How do you make it possible for others to love, to bloom, and to grow? How do you lead with love? By love, you know, and something that I love about this sort of before love is love, love was dangerous. It to me, when I hear it, there's an implication of resilience in there and a resilience of a community that like, yes, love was dangerous and it still is, but every day we still love, deeply and with more fire and more, need and want and desire, than the next day, you know? And I think it's, there's something in that resilience and in that, that hope, I hope the audience gets and feels and recognizes that you too are a part of this and you too, like, can do something. And I think, you know, it's easy to feel like there's not much we can do, mm-hmm. These days. And I think, you know, every bit counts, and just leading with love is huge. I'm not so much a hopeless romantic, but I am at the same time. Like I'm an Aquarius, so I feel everything and nothing at the exact same time. But yeah.
You're a hopeless romantic on paper.
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm feeling so much right now. You can't tell? Oh, okay.
Words of affirmation. I just cried a little bit.
Exactly. Inside. But yeah, so that's my hopes and dreams. For the audience, you know, I think you can speak more about like the bigger picture of the play. And Broadway, you know, but that's like another thing.
Oh, that's
yeah, Broadway. No, I agree with David in terms of what I'd love the audience to walk away from. I'm actually hoping, you know, speaking of putting it out there, I would love to, the first play has had its world premiere here at Long Wharf. I would love to continue working on the second play and the third play in relationship to this amazing theater, to this amazing group of people.
Huh? Is Jacob right there?
these are conversations. And you know, and I think New Haven would be a great kind of home for it. There's a lovely little queer scene, and you guys are you're bringing it to life, queer New Haven. There's a beautiful kind of queer scene and queer history here that I think is wonderful. So it would be a treat to continue development here on these other two plays. I won't, no spoilers, but you know,
come on,
if Tom and Russell, you know, make it, and that's all I'll say for our protagonists.
God, I was crying by the end of the show, so we'll see what happens.
Well, David, Ricardo, I want to thank you both for taking time out of your evening. I know that you wanted to go to dinner and do all that stuff to sit, have a conversation with us about this amazing production. I think this is going to be very eye-opening and a revelation for the Latinx community and for those that are going to experience the story from your point of view. I think it is important. I want to thank you and congratulate you both on that. And, you know, we're going to be plugging the play. I know that you guys will be running for about 2.5 weeks from October 8th all the way through November 2nd. Yeah. Which is going to be amazing, and I'm going to try my best to get in there and
he'll
go support and be there for you guys. And just very quickly, if people that are going to be listening to the episode wanted to reach out to you guys, can you plug yourselves on social media? That way, you know, people know how to get a hold of you and you know, bother you with messages or tell you how great and fantastic you guys are. All of that.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, please bother away. I have a website. It's my name, David, spelled David, but pronounced David. DavidMendizabal.com, which I'm not going to spell that right now, but it'll be in the bio of this, I'm sure.
Yes,
and also on Instagram at @its_David, spelled D-A-V-E-E-D. You can find me there.
And I also have a website, www.ricardoperezgonzalez.com, and I can be found at RPGNYC on the Insta.
That's amazing. Well, again, once again, thank you both for joining us. Go enjoy dinner and break many legs. Have a great show. And hopefully we'll have some feedback and updates for everyone later on.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, that was Ricardo Perez Gonzalez and, of course, the director, David Mendizabal. And the show is going to be running from October 9th all the way through November 3rd. For those of you who are living in the New Haven area or even in the Connecticut area.
Or New York area.
Or Rhode New York Island, or wherever. Rhode Island or Massachusetts. Anyone who wants to take a trip down and come down and see the show, it's amazing. You can use a code called, well, the code is Gay Talk, and that'll give you $15 off your booking for the tickets. There are some restrictions that apply. We do need to say that to make sure that, you know, we're covered. And you can go to longwharf.org to buy those tickets and get more information on that show and all of the other amazing productions that Long Wharf provides to our community.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited about this. Please use code GAYTALK, longwharf.org. We'll put it all on our post this evening, including Ricardo and David's websites, Long Wharf's website, everything for the show. But this is a very important moment in regional theater, and I am glad that Gay Talk 2.0 had the chance to talk to some amazing and talented theater artists tonight. So
that's amazing. All right, well, guys, we're going to let you go. We're going to go get dinner now and do all that good stuff and, of course, produce this episode so you guys can get it within a couple of minutes. So y'all have a fantastic night. That is our show. And how do we do?
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.